Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It. I'm Maria Wyatt, and we're starting a new month, December. We only have 24 days of Christmas. But before we start, just a reminder, our phone here at the station is 337-8874, and we are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingüe. But before we start, today is World AIDS Day, WAD, and the committee is doing Thursday, December 1st, from 4 to 8:30 at Sonic in El Centro. They're doing a World AIDS Day event on Thursday, today, December 1st. WAD serves to focus global attention on the devastating impact of the HIV/AIDS epidemic. Observances of this day provide an opportunity to demonstrate the importance of the fight against HIV/AIDS and to maintain universal access and human rights to stop the epidemic. And according to the Imperial County Public Health Department, at the end of 2010, there were around 146 people here in Imperial County living with AIDS. That's not the HIV virus, but that's AIDS. There's probably a lot more with the HIV virus, but the AIDS symptoms or hasn't, the virus has manifested. So it's, and the HIV epidemic is a serious threat to the Hispanic Latino community. And again, the 2010 census reported that Latinos, who comprise 80% of the overall population in Imperial County, account for 77% of all reported cases. So today, Thursday, December 1st, from 4 to 8:30, they're going to have an event, and they're going to have a lot of things going on. They're going to have drawings. They're going to have actually special performances by Chris Hassett. He's a singer, songwriter, activist, and Keith Summers, who's a hip-hop artist. They're going to have a $500 food gift card, a $500 gas card, an Apple iPad. So they're going to have some drawings, and there's going to be a lot of booths with information. They're going to have some free HIV rapid test, which is awesome. I had to go through the old one. They had to draw my blood, and then I had to wait a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And I did that like 3 times. So, well, because of the pregnancy, I think they have to do it.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. Okay. Now they have to check for that. And when I started working for behavioral health, I was specifically working with alcohol and drug. And so we would actually refer a lot of our clients to get HIV tested. And so I think, well, I'm working here. Might as well get it tested so I can know what the process is. And it was a little bit nerve-wracking, but I've done it a couple of times. They're going to also have some flu shots, blood pressure and glucose test, informational foods, immunization checks, nutrition consultant. And they're also going to have some photos with Santa, games, music, entertainment, and an award recognition to an individual from our community who has demonstrated outstanding contribution against HIV/AIDS epidemic.
Wow.
So they're going to have a lot of things, and hopefully the weather cooperates. And if it doesn't, just take your jacket, take your boots, take gloves, and enjoy. Enjoy the event. It's for a good benefit. It's for awareness. We have to be aware that HIV at one point was a death sentence because of people like the WAD, the World AIDS Day Committee. They have promoted vaccinations. They've come out with new prolonged life. There has no cure. Once you have the HIV virus, you'll have it for life. But now it's no longer a death sentence. So,
yeah,
thanks to them.
A
lot of people who have survived. So, today we have Patricia Caro Arevalo. She's a supervisor for the crisis?
Crisis Assessment Center, and conservatorship case management. So,
for behavioral health. So today we're going to be talking about
Accessing services at behavioral health and how people can come into our services, how people can access services, and just talk a little bit about crisis in general and just kind of give an overview of what the whole first floor does and how to, you know, we want to make sure that people know how to get to our services if they really, really need it. So that's why I'm here.
You know what? And that's really good. A lot of people, including me, before I started working at Behavioral Health, you know, I would pass by 8th Street, and it's before we had the three-story building.
Oh.
You know, it was the hotel that right there in the quad, and it said mental health, you know, just alcohol and drug. I think it had alcohol and drug and mental health.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God. Yes, exactly. It's like, that's where all the, you know, I would say that, you know, that's where people who are crazy go there. But it's a whole different thing.
It is, and a lot of it is stigma, you know, that people don't want to go down there because everybody's going to know where they're going and they're going to go in that building and da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, people think that crisis has, you know, rubber rooms and restraints and, you know, we're going to put you in a straitjacket. And it's not like that at all, at all. We don't do those kind of things. We don't have restraints. We don't have anything like that. We like people to come in and...
No more lobotomies?
No. That was kind of done away with quite a few years ago. But, you know, and that's the thing, is that people think of that. They think of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest kind of thing. And I'm sure there's been other movies since, and there's probably some scary movie that all the kids have watched that, you know, deals with insane asylums and things like that. But we're not that way. You know, we've got very loving, caring staff there that want to make sure that these people don't come back. I mean, there's obviously something that made them end up at crisis, something in their life that was so significant that they felt that they needed to either take their life or try to harm somebody else, or due to their mental disorder cannot provide for their food, clothing, and shelter. They're just out there, and they, you know, somebody gives them money, they don't know how to use that money for food or use that money for shelter. And so those are the kind of people that we want to, you know, get better and get out and be functional back in the community, because, you know, we don't like seeing people in that situation. We don't like, you know, having a room full of people.
Mm-hmm.
We want people to get better and get well.
So let's start from the beginning. How does someone access or end up at crisis?
Well, someone ends up at crisis either one of two ways. One, they can come into our assessment center and just request assistance. They can request help. They say, you know, I'm not having a good day and I need somebody to talk to. So we'll do a brief pre-screening. It's a pre-screening assessment. And we just ask a bunch of questions. We ask, you know, if they're hearing voices, if they're seeing things, if they're either a danger to self, danger to others, things that have happened in their life, significant things that have happened in their life recently.
And what is the type of people who go there? Is there a specific age group, or have you gone all kinds of age groups that walk in to the for services right there at the crisis?
We get all ages. Sometimes we have our own children's department, we have an adults department, we have an alcohol and drug department. So we get pretty much everybody there. Usually the children will come in. We don't have as many because the parents will take them in and make appointments for them. But we have people walk in on their own.
But have you gotten any parents, you know, with their kids driving in? Yeah.
Oh,
screening.
Yeah.
Here I have my child.
Yes, yes,
really?
Yes. Yeah, we've had a few. And, of course, we take them immediately to crisis to kind of, you know, settle down the situation, because we don't want them in a waiting room with a bunch of other people, you know, having them freak out or having them get upset or their family members and thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, is this what they do here? So we try and settle the situation down so that it's calmer.
But imagining, you know, what the parent has gone through, what they've gone through, the family, to take that step, you know.
It's difficult. It's difficult for the family. One thing that I always, you know, kind of, we want to make sure that everybody's safe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if your kid is yelling, screaming, or whatever, we certainly don't want you driving with that child, because that child could jump out of the car, or you could grab you and cause an accident, and we don't want more, you know, anything to happen to anyone. So we would encourage to call law enforcement if the child is that out of control. And yeah, we've had some come in on their own. You know, another family member will kind of sit on them to keep them calm in the back seat or whatever. But, you know, if it's too out of control and you can't handle it, please call law enforcement to kind of help with that situation, because we don't want anybody getting mm-hmm. hurt. So anyway, as you were asking, how do people access services? So we go in and we do a brief pre-screening. And if we feel that you meet, you know, that you're in an imminent danger, then we take you over to the crisis department. And that sounds so scary, but it is really not. What happens is that we take you over to the crisis area, and we, you know, admit you into crisis. And then one of our staff, we have mental health rehab techs, we have mental health rehab specialists, or myself, program supervisor, that'll go in and do an interview so we can kind of get into a more in-depth and find out what's going on, what caused this to have you come in, what caused this problems. Maybe we can just, you know, kind of do some brief interventions there to kind of help you get past it, and maybe that'll be that. See the psychologist or psychiatrist if need be, and then you're out the door.
But what
That's
if
the easiest way.
What, okay, so what if somebody comes in a crisis mode, but they're violent and they're, you know, just want to get out. They don't want to. You can see that they're probably imminent threat to themselves or to others, you know, danger. And they just don't want to be there. They just, you know, they're very physical or aggressive.
Usually what happens, those people are brought in by law enforcement. Normally we don't have those people brought in by the family member. And if they are, sometimes we will call our psychiatrist over, and if the person is wanting to get medication, we can give them medication to kind of help calm them down a little bit. Or
what if they refuse to take medication?
Well, it kind of makes it a little bit difficult because we want people to not have this be a harrowing experience to where they never want to come back or they don't want to receive services. So we really, really try and convince them. A lot of times they'll go to the ER prior to getting to us and get something to help calm them down. It is traumatic. You know, you're there at crisis. That's why we like people to access services on their own, because they have a little bit more control over the situation. At crisis, once they're on what's called a 50-150, which is part of the Welfare and Institutions Code, which means that they are either a danger to themselves or a danger to others, or because of their mental disorder, cannot provide for the food, clothing, and shelter, they don't have any control. They're there on an involuntary basis. So
who does that? Who puts them on?
Who does the people in this county that have the ability to put people on 5150s are law enforcement officers, those who have full post status, and then are
what's a full post status?
Post. I don't remember what it stands, but they're police officers that have. Like, there's some police officers or some officers that only have it while they're working, during the course of their duties. These guys, like police officers, have it all the time. And I'm sure that there's law enforcement officers out there going, what the heck is she talking about? But these guys have...
Guess what? You have the ability to put people on 5150.
Yeah, I know. And so they have the ability to do this, and it's part of their job, and they are police officers, you know, 24/7. Mm-hmm. So that's what it is. There's some that, like I said, don't. They only have it while in the course of their duty, on their jobs. And then our staff psychiatrists, our staff psychologists, and MFTs and LCSWs have the ability in our staff, mm-hmm. not an LCSW from outside of our agency, they have the ability to put people on 5150s.
Have they done that on minors, or is it just on adults?
No, we do get minors in, and yeah, they can put them on. Usually when we get minors, I would say 99% of the time they come in already by law enforcement. Something's happened at the school, something's happened at their home, and that's why they're being brought in to us. Like I said, it's usually we don't get as many minors as we do adults. Usually the, you know, because they have a parent that's involved, and the parent will take them into their team. Hopefully they're at that time open to services with our children's services. And we do have children's services in Calexico. In El Centro, we have the FRCs, the Family Resource Center in Calexico, and we also have a team in San Pasqual. So we are pretty out there making it. Oh, I'm sorry. Don't forget the Brawley team.
Oh,
God.
Yes, that's true.
I'm sorry. Team 6. Sorry. We do have them. So we are all over the valley. So we make it easy. Behavioral health makes it easy for people to access services because we're not in just one central location. We're out in San Pasqual. You know, we've got clinics everywhere. So people can access services.
So it can be okay. But for teens, do you treat them the same? You know, for parents who are out there, you know, listening, and, you know, teenagers are very hard.
They're very oppositional.
They're very oppositional. And they're sometimes very dramatic, too.
Oh, gosh.
You know, just, you know, if you don't let me go, I, you know, just. What, at one point, looking at, now that I'm a parent, what point should they call law enforcement or, you know, that, for them to get a sense of when should I take them to crisis, or is this something that I need to do, call, or can I handle it, or?
You know, most people, the situation starts to escalate. It starts to get bigger and bigger and bigger. If you can get it when it's a very small situation before it becomes a big old thing, I would encourage people to bring in their kids. Like, if they're starting to see their kid kind of depressed, mm-hmm. and just kind of isolating, and before they had a bunch of friends and now they only have a few friends, or their behaviors start to get different, call, make an appointment, mm-hmm. to try and get your kid to come in. And I know that, you know, it's easy for me to say, yeah, call and make an appointment. The child has to want to come in, but as parents, we still have that ability to make them come in. We still have that.
As opposed to the adults, right?
As opposed to the adults that we don't have any control over, because they're adults and they have their own free will. So as kids, parents have a little bit more leverage. Granted, you know, sometimes it's difficult. We want to nip it in, like I said, nip it in the bud and try and get it when the behaviors are starting to change. So, if they can, they can call our main office. It's 760-482-4000 and ask to make an appointment at the children's department. Then they will be transferred over to somebody who can help them schedule an appointment. They'll ask them a few pieces of information, name, age, social security, that kind of stuff, just easy stuff. And then they'll schedule an appointment with an intake clinician. And we have males and females in our children's department that, you know, that are master's level people. We have some that are licensed. So they can, they will have an intake with them. And the intake basically is a formality. They ask a lot of questions. They kind of get in-depth to find out what's going on with the kid and to give them a diagnosis to admit them into services. So once they're admitted into services, then they are scheduled with what's called an initial nursing assessment. They see the nurse, and, yes, if there's any lab that's needed, that's where it gets drawn. And then, not drawn, but it gets ordered. And then after that, they will see the psychiatrist. Now, this isn't a process. This is just one day. It's over a course of some time, and depending on where you live and depending on the scheduling and stuff like that, that also has a lot to play. But it goes pretty quick, and so, yeah, that's the easiest way. The easiest mm-hmm. way, and the best way to do it. Unfortunately, sometimes we don't see these behaviors, or something just kind of comes over like a tidal wave, and, you know, the child is having difficulties, and it's starting to escalate. If the situation, like I said earlier, is at a point where it's dangerous, then you need to get law enforcement involved so that law enforcement can take the child, you know, out and take them and bring them to us. Now, I'm sure that is probably one of the hardest things for a parent to do, is to call a cop on their child.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, like I said, it's easier to, you know, make an appointment and go in that way. But if it's dangerous and your child is in imminent danger, I would much rather call the police on my child than have my child end up, you know,
in a worse situation.
And so, if that happens, then the children, the children are brought in to us, and then we assess them and make a decision as to what needs to happen.
Well, so we're talking to Patricia Caro Arevalo. She is a supervisor for the crisis and assessment, and what else?
One of those other hats.
You have so many hats. Well, we're talking about accessing services through behavioral health through the Crisis or Assessment Center, and we'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. A 5 to 6 minute highlight podcast of the same show is available on KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You are still listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingüe. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. And, of course, you can access this show through our podcast and previous shows through our podcast at kxoradio.com. I'm Maria Wyatt, and today we are talking to Patricia Caro Arevalo. She's a program supervisor for the Assessment Center, Crisis Center, conservatorship?
Case management.
A lot of hats she has. Mm-hmm. And today we're talking about accessing services through behavioral health and the crisis, too.
Crisis, yes.
So we were talking about getting a minor into the system, into behavioral health, getting them assessed, you know, the whole process, getting assessment, getting a nursing assessment, going through the psychiatrist for the, you know, if necessary, for medication if necessary. What about for adults? Is it the same process? Or
the process is basically the same as far as the intake, the nursing, and the psychiatric. The only difference is that with an adult, it has to be the adult that wants the services that's calling. Mom can't call for an 18-year-old because they're an adult.
And that's hard.
And that's hard, yeah, because and we get a lot of parents that call and say, you know, I want to make an appointment for my child.
They're still living under my house. I'm still providing for them.
Exactly. And they want to make an appointment. And what they're not understanding is that our services are voluntary. And so you have to request the services yourself. And they'll ask you on the phone, can I please speak to the person? I mean, somebody can make the phone call, dial, and say, I need this. But the person that wants services has to actually be the one to give their information. So, and once they make an appointment, once they schedule an appointment, then they have their intake at the assessment center or at one of the teams. It all depends on where it's scheduled. But a clinician will see them, ask them questions. It usually takes about anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour, depending on how the conversation is going and stuff like that. There's some people that don't have a lot of information to give, and there's some people that have a lot. So it just all depends. And then the clinician will do up a report, and that gets passed on. That mm-hmm. stays in their chart. And it stays on, it has their diagnosis, and what was the problems that brought them in, presenting problem, what we call. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it goes to the nurse, and the nurse sets some goals and figures out, you know, what they need to do during the next course, the next year of treatment, so what kind of things we want to accomplish. And then after that, they see the psychiatrist, and if needed, medication is given. Now, with adults, we have we also have an anxiety and depression clinic in El Centro, so people that have those kind of disorders can go to that clinic and see somebody there, and it's we have therapy that's offered, because a lot of times people mm-hmm. that have these issues are in need of therapy. So
with therapy, it might be resolved.
Yeah, exactly, and maybe you don't even need medication, mm-hmm. just the therapy, and that might take care of the situation. And what we want to do is we want to get people well. Our thing is wellness. We don't want to keep people in therapy or, you know, for the next 2 years.
Or keep them
years.
In our system for yeah. the rest of their life. No. They need to get better and get back into the community.
Exactly. And that's what our goal is, to get better and get back into the community. So we're going to do whatever it takes to get them better. You know, we have them see the psychiatrist. We have them see a nurse. We have them see therapist, whatever they need for their specific problem to get them over this. And we do, we have seen a lot of results. A lot of people have gotten better. And then we also have our drug and alcohol program, which mm-hmm. Maria is probably a little bit more versed in accessing services there. But, mm-hmm. You know, we have different departments, so we see the need, and we're trying to meet mm-hmm. the need. Children's department has a lot of different programs out there for different issues that have come up.
Vista Sands, yes. the ALP program.
Exactly.
We also have CalWORKS. Mm-hmm. We're over there at CalWORKS.
We're out there. Mm-hmm. We're out there, and we're trying to make it less stigmatizing for people. We don't want people to not want to get services because they think, oh, they're going to put me in a straitjacket, or I'm going to be mm-hmm. in a rubber room. No, we don't do that. We don't want that. We want people to get well. We don't want to see people.
That's right. I'm working with adolescents. It's difficult because they have that stigma that if you go to behavioral health, it's for people who have, you know, and they call it crazy, you mm-hmm. know, because I talk to them and, you know, I'm not crazy. No, I know you're not crazy. It's just maybe you need to control better your anger. You know, they have a lot of anger issues. And they don't know how to control that anger. They're very, just a lot of outbursts, or maybe they're feeling sad or depressed, and, you know, they need someone to talk to, you know, might get some therapy. And it's just talking to them, and for us has helped getting peer supporters involved.
Oh yeah, yeah, I can.
Who are their same age? You know, we have kids who have been gone through our system here through behavioral health. We're gone through a system and now are working. You know, they're working with us, so they can easily relate, and they're young, so they easily relate with the young.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and that's worked. That's worked for us to be able to bring them into the system. And, you know, we have a lot of these kids who are young adults that have never accessed our system, and now they're 18, and they've had maybe a lot of, when we were not aware, you know, they were never identified. They never came through the crisis or never came through accessing services, and they had a lot of problems in the family, and as soon as they turn 18, you know, the parents say, you know what, that's it. I can't handle you anymore. You're 18, you're an adult. I have smaller kids at home that I need to take care of. You know, you're on your own. Now we're dealing with these 18-year-olds who are homeless and need services. And
don't have good coping skills.
And don't have good coping skills. So we're grabbing a lot of these. And we're able to provide a lot of services. So we just provided housing for two young brothers. And they're very in their just 18, actually. Just turned 18, and we were able to provide some services, getting some shelter. So some housing, emergency housing. So it's difficult. And then especially right now during the holidays. The holidays are getting here. So, they had no food at all, no clothes. And between other agencies, and we work with other agencies, working with them, we were able to get them housing through us. We were able to get food through another agency. We were able to get the clothing from another agency. It's just collaboration.
And there's a lot of agencies out there that are willing to help. Mm-hmm. It's just knowing where to go. And our case managers, our mental health rehab techs, boy oh boy, they have a load on them because they're always looking for different resources. Mm-hmm. And they have the resources. They know the resources.
And they have to be really good because right now everybody is very limited on their resources.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And some of them, that's it. They have no more funds. You know, because there's so many people who are in need because of our economic situation here. The way it is, it's just more people need more services.
Exactly. And so, you know, these case managers will dig something out of the woodwork. If, you know, if there's a resource out there, they certainly will.
They're very resourceful. Very resourceful.
And that's why, you know, it's important for people to come to us because we know these resources. We have the resources and we have the connections.
And you have done... Don't you write there through the crisis and then the first floor, don't you have the test?
We have the test program. And the
which
test
stands
is
for Transitional
Engagement
Supportive Services.
Yay! test program. Yeah, and that's a really important service because that, after a person leaves crisis, they are kind of out there and we want to make sure that they don't come back to crisis. And so, they have a case manager that's assigned to them to help them kind of get through the system, shall we say, because sometimes it's just kind of difficult if you don't have any support or if you don't have anybody to really help you out. So, boy, I have a bad throat this morning. Anyway, and so what this service does is they provide a case manager that helps them through the initial intake and through the nursing assessment. If their issue that they were so severely depressed was food, you know, they hook them up with different places that give out food baskets and things like that, or help them get an ID so that they can go to a place to get food baskets. You know, just whatever they need to do to help them get over this hump so that they can get into services and start being functional again. The last thing we keep saying is that we don't want people to come back into our services in that way. We would like people to access services on a voluntary basis. But when that doesn't happen, well, we're there. Mm-hmm. And so,
and you do get people who end up at crisis.
Yeah, we do.
But that's something, and I think it's hard for people to realize that, like you said, it's voluntary. If they don't want to take medication,
they don't have to.
They don't have to.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, it becomes, again, a threat to themselves or to others, right. Then that's when.
And then we come into conservatorship, and conservatorship is the most restrictive environment where somebody has been deemed unable to provide for food, clothing, and shelter by the court. And then we make decisions for them. We make medical, psychiatric decisions for them, depending on what the court has ordered.
Is that when you take... I mean,
that's conservatorship.
That's conservatorship. Yeah. And what about medication? I mean, they have to take their medication or...
Yeah, they have to take it because they don't have the ability to make decisions leading to their what's called grave disability, unable to provide for their food, clothing, and shelter. So,
how many do we have?
I think we have 66 on our caseload right now. So, and that's spread out between MERTs right now and
mental health rehab techs.
Mental health rehab techs, yes.
And how is that a long process, or can somebody say, you know what, Yeah, okay, you're going to be on conservatorship.
Well, usually conservatorship, we go to court. I mean, they have a public defender there. So.
And then they can even say, yeah, I don't want to be on conservatorship.
Oh, yeah. For the first 30 days, and a lot of times that's just what some person needs. You know, they need to be on treatment for 30 days to kind of get them over what's going on. You know, maybe that 30 days worth of medication, 30 days worth of food, 30 days worth of shelter, those kind of
things.
Stabilize, yeah, exactly. Those kind of things really, really help when a person has just been out there homeless and maybe their nutrition is bad and just kind of do all the things that they need, make decisions for them. So after 30 days, they'll come down to court. And they'll have their public defender assigned to them. And so, you know, we try and work with a public defender. We try and work with them, with a patient, to give them the best service possible. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, you know, people want to go back home. Okay, fine, we'll let you go back home, but you stay on conservatorship, so in case something happens, you know, you can always come back into our services mm-hmm. rather quickly. And we really try, and we have a good relationship, and so, you know, we don't want this to be a punishment. We don't want this to be, you know,
it's for their safety
and to get them the medication so they're not out there homeless, so they're not out there hearing voices, seeing things, constantly wanting to hurt themselves. Because, you know, a lot of times people make suicide attempts, and one of these days it may be successful, and that's what we certainly don't want. We don't want that situation. So, you know, we try to do whatever we can mm-hmm. for these patients. And sometimes we have family involved, and sometimes we don't. And it's nice to have family involved because it's somebody that goes to visit the client, and that means a lot in the recovery process to have somebody there,
yeah.
You know, and a support system. And eventually, you know, conservatorship is not a permanent thing. Definitely not. You know, people have rights, and so they can speak to their public defender about you know, the things that they're having. And we go to court on a regular basis for clients who say, you know, I think I've had enough. I'm doing really good, and I need to contest my conservatorship, so let's go back to court. And that's exactly what we do.
The judge makes the decision.
The judge makes a decision as to whether they feel that.
Are there any minors on conservatorship?
No, because they would have their parents. Yeah.
What if the parent can't handle it?
I think that usually goes through Department of Social Services, and then Social Services puts them in some type of placement, and they become wards of the court.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. There's a code for them. Dependent minors.
Okay.
Yeah, the dependent minors. And so, but yeah, we don't deal with them.
Okay. Just with the adults.
With the adults, 18 and over. Yeah, we have some young guys and we have some older folks. So we spread out. You know, big age span.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
So, again, accessing services. If you know, call. They can either go by themselves.
Yeah, they can walk in.
They can call.
They can call, sure.
What the phone number?
They can call our 760-482-4820, or we have a toll-free number, 1-800-817-5292. And after you say what you're saying, I'll tell you a little bit more about our toll-free number and explain a little bit more about that.
And it's bilingual.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah. Or the other one is, you know, we don't want to use that, but the crisis, going through the crisis. You know, we want to not have, but...
But it's there. The service is there in case
it's needed.
How
long do you stay in crisis?
Well, it's a 72-hour hold. We don't... That's to say that people can be held for 72 hours, not that we hold you for 72 hours. But a lot of times with our good interventions and stuff like that, people kind of realize that this isn't... that they have something else out there to live for.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if they're doing a lot better, the clinician will come in and say, you know, he can withdraw the application for the hold, and then they can go back to their homes. And that's one thing that we really, really, we have a huge effort, because we don't want to send them back into the same situation that put them here in the first place. Mm-hmm. So we, as part of our discharge planning, at crisis, we talk to family members, and so that includes releases of information, because of course everything is confidential.
Except if they're minors.
Yeah. So, you know, we want to make sure that the family is going to take them back, and we talk to the family, hey, listen, you know, this is what's going on, this is what they need, da 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 da, and get everybody involved. It's a whole unit to get a really good support system. So, and if there's no family involved, then that makes it a little bit more difficult. You know, there's shelters that we can refer to. There's different places. I mean, at times we've set people up in hotels. because we just don't have the resources. We don't have the resources. But we look for resources. We look for things to do. And a lot of times, you know, just getting a neutral third party in there to talk to family and to talk to the client, it really, really helps. So it just all depends on what they need. And then after we've done our discharge planning, then we refer them to Tess, and mm-hmm. they keep on with that.
And then from the Tess, they can probably refer them to the team, something more permanent.
Exactly. And then the team will follow them as long as, you know, kind of get them over that, mm-hmm. that hump. Yeah. So, yeah. So anyway, as I was going to say about our 1-800 number, mm-hmm. now our 1-800 number is available 24/7.
If I call at December the 24th.
December 24th.
Or December 31st at 11:59.
Somebody will answer the phone. Yes, they will. We have our access department that mans the phones, and they all answer the phone, and they will screen the calls to see what is the need. Mm-hmm. And then they will give it to one of the mental health rehab techs or mental health rehab specialists that's on call for after hours. We always have somebody on call after hours, so they can call that 1-800-817-5292. And just if they need somebody to talk, or if they want to find out in a very anonymous way, because mm-hmm. we have no way of knowing who these people are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even if you call by phone, it's pretty anonymous. Mm-hmm. So you can get information, but just in case you have that, you find that need at 3:00 in the morning and you want to call and talk to somebody, the need is being met by mm-hmm. our after hour service.
24/7.
24/7.
7 days a week.
7 days a week. There's always somebody on call.
Lastly, what if crisis is not enough? You're on hold or you're being held for 72 hours, and that's still not enough.
So what happens is that we need to make a decision quickly. We need to, within the first 24 hours, figure out what's going on and get them to, like you said, a place that can give them more services than what we're able to provide there. So that would mean a hospitalization. Our hospitals that we use are in San Diego. We have no inpatient psychiatric facility in this county, mm-hmm. which makes it real difficult to visit family and friends, but there's always a phone.
Skype, maybe.
Skype. What? I don't know, but, you know, I guess it's possible. But anyway, so what happens at crisis is if the clinician sees them and feels that they need to go to a hospital, then we will make the arrangements. Mm-hmm. We will make the arrangements for the person to be transferred to one of the psychiatric hospitals that we contract to in San Diego. And then we will take them to get medically cleared just to make sure that there's no medical issues. Mm-hmm. And then ambulance will take them to San Diego. Now, people are probably wondering, what about the costs? I said, well, the costs, yeah, we if a person doesn't have any insurance, we normally apply for Medi-Cal for them there. Mm-hmm. So that we don't want that to be an additional burden. We want the person to get well. We're not thinking of finances at the mm-hmm. time. And if they have Medi-Cal, well, then the Medi-Cal covers it. If mm-hmm. they have private insurance, then the private insurance covers it. We usually try to go, like if you have private insurance, we usually try to go to a provider. You know, we'll get your insurance card, we'll call and see which providers are. We're not going to mm-hmm. go to out of provider. if we have to, we have to. But
yeah.
Excuse me, but normally we don't.
Okay.
So the other thing is that the person will stay up at the hospital in San Diego until they are better or after the 72-hour hold has expired. The doctor up there has the ability to extend that hold, or the person can sign in as a voluntary patient, which gives you back the control mm-hmm. over your treatment because you can, you know, sign in or out at any time. So we encourage people
to stay. Ultimately, it's their
decision. If they're there voluntarily, and we don't want people coming out of the hospital too quickly where they haven't gotten enough tools to deal with their
situation. And how do they get over there? I mean, they get over there, but how do they come back after they get released?
Well, we have our transport department that usually goes and picks people up. If family wants to go pick the client up.
But sometimes family, there's no visa. I mean, especially to go to San Diego. And
yeah, and that makes it difficult because of the 2-hour and the hill, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But our staff does go pick up clients and bring them back.
Oh,
or
good.
Or you know, sometimes
that's
if they're able
service.
To travel or bus, you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever they need to come back. A lot of times we have people decide to stay up there. They have crisis houses. They have things like that offer longer treatment to kind of help them get better and maybe get away from the situation that put them there in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, we've been talking to Patricia Caro-Arevalo. She's the program supervisor for the crisis and assessment. And we've been going through the whole, you know, accessing services through behavioral health. Again, if you can give us the number again.
The main number is the 480-760-482-4000. And
we are located at
202 North 8th Street here in the lovely city of El Centro. And that's our main clinic, and so people can access services there. They can access services at our Family Resource mm-hmm. Center in Calexico, at our Family Resource Center in San Pasqual in the Winter Haven area, in our clinic up in Brawley. We have children's and adults mm-hmm. services in the Brawley area, and we also have children's and adults here in El Centro. And then we have our alcohol and drug services mm-hmm. on
yeah.
State Street.
And also CalWORKs.
CalWORKs.
Don't forget CalWORKs over CalWORKs. There at Department of Social Services.
Yeah.
Well,
we have so many
kinds
of
people. Thank you so much for
thank
coming.
You.
Thank you. You know, it's been a pleasure. Every time you come, you have I like your voice. Your voice is so good.
Thank you.
Compared to mine.
Oh,
it's
going to
make my voice really good.
We're going to put synthesizers on our voices.
I know, huh? But thank you again for
thank
coming.
Thank you for having
me. And also, just a reminder, today is World AIDS Day. It's commemorating, you know, the efforts that, the progress of, to fight against HIV and AIDS. And it's going to be today at 4 o'clock to 8:30 at the Sonic parking lot here in El Centro. And they're going to have a lot of activities, a lot of drawings, you know, that $500 gift card, food,
wow.
Gas. I know.
Yeah.
$500.
That's a lot.
I know. Even an iPad. So, you know, join them. Again, HIV and AIDS, it's, you know, it's does not discriminate. So we have a lot of cases here in the Valley. So we need to be awareness. So thank you again for listening, and we'll be back next week. Have a good weekend. Have a good, safe weekend. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.